This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Kushan Avidar, in for Allison Stewart, who's on medical leave. So I really like country music, and recently Beyoncé stopped the world in its tracks, and hey, what else is new? She surprised everyone with a country album, Cowboy Carter. This set off conversations about race and the history of country music, and our guest today, Alice Randall, is a novelist and songwriter who's already been having this conversation for decades. Miss Randall has a new memoir and album, and they share a title, My Black Country. The memoir honors Black musicians of country music. She weaves in music history while reflecting on her early life in Motown, Detroit, surrounded by a country music-loving family. She moved to a white-collar community in Washington, D.C. She had a journey to Music City in Nashville, and then a career in the country music industry, writing songs for Mo Bandy, Judy Rodman, Glenn Campbell, Marie Osmond, and the 1994 hit X's and O's for Trisha Yearwood. Along with the book, Alice's album, My Black Country, The Songs of Alice Randall, will contain 11 of her songs, all sung for the first time by Black women in the genre, such as Layla McCullough, Rhiannon Giddens, Alison Russell, and Reese Palmer. The book, My Black Country, A Journey Through Country Music's Black Past, Present, and Future, is out April 9th, followed by the album, My Black Country, The Songs of Alice Randall, on April 12th. She also has an upcoming event in New York City on Wednesday, April 10th at Brooklyn Public Library's Central Branch with Charlemagne the God and special guest Roseanne Cash at 7 p.m. Eastern. Alice Randall joins us to discuss. Miss Randall, hi, welcome to All of It.
I am so thrilled to be on All of It. And let me say, that is the most accurate, elegant, and concise introduction I've had so far on this tour.
Well, shout out to our producer, El Malik Anderson, who helped create that. It is a team effort. I'm sure that they really appreciate you saying that. Thank you so much. Let's dive into it. We mentioned it at the top. Beyoncé just dropped her new album, Cowboy Carter, this past Friday. What were your first impressions of the new album?
I love the new album. I'm in love with the new album. It feels like I had a twin in some of my journey that I didn't know I had in some sense. But larger, it is a Juneteenth moment. It's good news at long last that Black women are being recognized for what they have contributed to the genre of country music, because Beyoncé is both making her own history in an extraordinary artistic space, but she's reflecting on what generations of Black women and men have contributed to country.
That idea of making her own history really resonates with me. I want to dive into that a little bit, because since announcing the album back in February, there have been a lot of conversations about race, genre, this idea of authenticity of who, kind of what you're referring to, who gets to make country music. So how has this album pushed the needle in terms of what we think of country music?
Well, I think it started a global discussion that includes noting that, you know, the earliest Black country song that I know comes from 1838 or earlier, because it appears in Frederick Douglass's My Bondage and My Freedom. That's his second autobiography. And I think we can see fragments of that song in the very famous Take Me Back to Tulsa, the Bob Wills classic. But Frederick Douglass heard Black people singing a version of that song on the Chesapeake Bay in the early 19th century.
It makes me think, please go ahead.
Well, and as we all know that Rhiannon Giddens played on one of the first songs to drop from the album, Texas Hold'em. The banjo is an instrument that's going to come into these Americas earlier and develop in the Caribbean, in the United States, by African music makers of. And so this is another part of what we see here.
There's so much historical significance to these, whether it's instrumentation, title of the song, where it originally came from. And one of the songs on the album titled Blackbird, she features a quartet of Black country singers, Tanner Adele, Tiara Kennedy, Brittany Spencer. There's Raina Roberts. Let's take a listen to that song now. We're going to...
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly. All your life, you were only waiting for this moment to arise. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these sunken eyes.
So, Miss Randall, this was originally a folk song written by Paul McCartney and John Lennon about hope and survival. We're talking about historical significance. What's the significance of her including these particular singers on the record?
Well, I'm so thrilled that you chose to play Blackbird because it's going to give you an example of a very important aesthetic equation. What makes country country? It's Celtic ballad forms, narratives, which Irish, Scottish, English, plus African influences, plus evangelical Christianity. When Paul McCartney, John Lennon sing this song, it is, as you say, a folk song. You have to add the Black influences, the Black voices, and the gospel, the Black gospel influences to transform Blackbird into a country song. And that's exactly what's happened here. But there's another thing going on with this song, Blackbird, I think, is that it's a shout out. This is a deeper, here's another Easter egg or deeper level of analysis to a 1976 song, Blackbird, that was charted by a Black man, Stoney Edwards. And it's actually one of my favorite country songs. It is a song about a Black father who says, essentially, y'all tried to destroy me with words. With a son, he says, y'all tried to destroy me with words, but my father sheltered me with better words. Mm. And it's a song in conversation with Beyoncé's extraordinary song, Protector. It's a song in conversation with the folk song, Blackbird. But it is its own extraordinary invitation for contemporary Black women artists to come in and join forces with Beyoncé, who is a superstar, pop, R&B, country. She is some kind of universal genius in music in this moment. And this song is doing a lot of work.
You know, when you talk about what makes country country, it reminds me of how you start your memoir. And you start it by saying that Harlan Howard said that country music was three chords and the truth. But your interpretation is a little different. What are the three truths to you in country music?
I think there are four truths. So he said it was three chords and the truth. And I say it's three chords and four very particular truths. Life is hard. God is real. The road, family, and liquor are significant compensations. And the past is better than the present. And I think that past is better than the present is one of the many racial fault lines in country. In country, the past that is better than the present is a long for and lost Africa before colonization that often appears in the form of sacred nature, or it is an early part of childhood where your family has radically sheltered you despite the fact that slavery steals childhood and Jim Crow segregation steals childhood, that there are these examples where Black parents have actually given their child a little taste of Eden. Mm. So life is hard, God is real, the road, liquor, and family are significant compensations.
And not to get too nerdy, but what are the three chords there?
Well, the three chords really symbolize that country is typically not as complex musically as it is complex lyrically. Country to me, I actually don't play any instruments. And there's wonderful musicmanship in a lot of country. However, country is really a storytelling form. It goes back to Homer, in a sense, that of these sung poems, that is in contrast, say, to funk music, that is so much about rhythms, complexity of rhythm, And funk is very complex musically and rhythmically. Country is very complex lyrically. It's a shorthand.
I'd love to listen to one more quick clip from the album we were just talking about. You referenced this idea of the first family of Black country, which includes artists such as Esley Riddle, DeFord Bailey, Lil Hardin Armstrong, Ray Charles, Charlie Pride, and Herb Jeffries. And you said in an interview with The Cut recently that Beyoncé is actually a descendant of Ray Charles. So what I'd love to do is let's just listen to Ray Charles's Bye Bye Love from his album Modern Sounds in Country and Western Music. Here it is. So, Ms. Randall, we've been talking a lot about lineage and now genealogy, I guess, that goes into Black country singers. Who historically have been the gatekeepers or protectors of country music? And when did Black country artists finally begin to receive actual recognition within the music industry?
Well, I think the real recognition is coming right now. I want to say that Beyoncé, for me, thematically, is the genius child of Ray Charles, the genius child symbolically of DeFord Bailey and Lil Hardin Armstrong, the founders of Black country and country. And you just play Bye Bye Love, and I just have to stop here and say I was born in 1959 in Motown, the same year as Motown Records. But my grandmother, who was born in the 19th century, my mother and my aunt only had one thing in common, and that thing they had in common was they loved country music. They didn't all love me. My mama was a bad mama, but they all loved country. And my Aunt Mary Frances's, one of her favorite country songs was the one you just played, Bye Bye Love by Ray Charles. She had had a child die in a house fire. She had known the most hard kinds of Bye Bye Love. And what I love about country and where I came to be a country songwriter, so I had a very difficult mother, abusive mother, and I learned early writing country songs in a Motown cherry tree to take what was too hard to bear and turn it into a song that made the hard bearable.
It goes back to that first truth that you mentioned about country music, that life is hard and what are you going to make of it? That's beautiful. We're talking to Alice Randall, who's a novelist, songwriter, educator, and food activist. Her memoir, My Black Country, A Journey Through Country's Music's Black Past, Present, and Future, is out April 9th, and her album, My Black Country, The Songs of Alice Randall, is out the 12th. We have a lot more questions to get to, especially with your past and this new memoir that you have coming out. So stick around. We'll take a short break and we'll be right back. This is all of it from WNYC. We're talking to Alice Randall about her memoir and upcoming album, both titled My Black Country. Ms. Randall, in your memoir, you talk about entering the country music industry, which you did decades ago, and you've since written hit singles and several successful novels. In My Black Country, you celebrate music's ever-loving Black roots. Why did now feel like the right time to release a memoir and an album? And how did you weave in your own life to kind of cover the evolution of country music?
Well, you know, I actually arrived in Nashville 41 years ago to be a country songwriter and publisher. And I am a country songwriter and publisher. That company that I formed back in 1983, Midsummer Music, is still going. And it's done some interesting things over the time. We published Mark Sanders, who's now in the Nashville Songwriters Hall of Fame. We published even a little bit of Garth Brooks. So it's been a wild, long ride. And we published a bunch of me. So I think, looking back when I started working on this memoir, no, I really started writing it 41 years ago. When I arrived, I started taking notes. And I was traveling with this first family of Black country in my head. They were my friends that accompanied me. Because when I arrived on Music Row, there was only one Black ally for me on Music Row when I arrived in 1983. And that was a Black woman who was working sort of as what was called a maid. She was a greeter in a performing rights organization. So this is a Black woman who's working sort of as in a role akin to a domestic servant in an office. But she was my fierce ally and helped point me in so many right directions. And nobody wanted me to be more successful in that first day. She had been there a long time to wait for somebody that looked like her to walk through the door and have a shot at getting to the top, being Black and female. So I feel that one of the reasons I wanted to write the book was when I started off. Now, in 2010, I published an article about Linda Martell, but I didn't think she had gotten her due. I knew Lil Hardin Armstrong, the mother of Black country, had not gotten her due. I knew that there are major TV shows telling lies about D. Fort Bailey to this moment, saying he had ended his life as a shoeshine boy or man, when I knew he had ended his life as a political man, making political music that helped my first father-in-law get elected as the first Black man in Tennessee elected to the state Senate. And so I wanted to tell the rest of D. Ford's story, D. Ford's story the way I knew it. I wanted to tell Lil's story, how she had been at Fisk University for 3 years, how she had traveled out to San Francisco, all the wild things she had done in country, including playing on Blue Yodel No. 9 in 1930. So what we have here with Beyoncé, why I'm so excited about that, it has taken us almost 100 years from Lil Hardin Armstrong in 1930.
And that history.
Beyoncé in 2024, that I spent 41 years in this industry, and I thought I was going to retire from country on my 65th birthday, which is in just a few weeks, May 4th. And I thought I was going to retire without ever having seen a Black woman at the top of the charts, though I had worked so hard in so many different ways to help achieve that for many different artists we tried it with.
And you hear,
I am thrilled that I get to see it before I retire.
And you hear that history in the music that you play as well. You know, we talked about the memoir. There's also the forthcoming album. I'd love to listen to one of the songs. This is The Ballad of Sally Ann, sung by Rhiannon Giddens. Let's listen to a quick clip from that.
Shivered as she said, I'll love you till the day I'm dead.
Miss Randall, you've got songs from the 80s, in the 90s, in the 2000s, 2010s. How did you decide which songs to feature on the album?
Well, the brilliant producer, Ebony Smith, actually picked the songs. The principal, they would all be songs that had been recorded at the time, and songs that had they've been recorded and released as country songs on country artists. You've mentioned some of them. Girls Ride Horses 2 had gone, was a top 10, was my first top 10. X's and O's went to number one for 2 weeks. And so Ebony found the songs. And one of the things I love about the Ballad of Sally Ann, Rhiannon Giddens is a genius. She's extraordinary. But what Ebony also brings is a genius as well. And what she brings to it, if you continue to hear the whole song, there are horns at the end of it. Why are there horns on this song? There are horns on this song to give us an audio cue, reminder, that lynching occurred in this United States into deep into the 20th century, that Emmett Till was lynched after he was dragged down that road. And that when you heard the original Ballad of Sally Ann that was on a Grammy-nominated album with Mark O'Connor, who Isaac Stern has said was the great living fiddle or violin player, and John Cowan, who was one of the founders of the Newgrass Revival, when you heard their version of it, which was stunning, it's like a white distance look at the lynching. When you hear Rhiannon sing it, it is embodied resistance. It is passionate witness of love that is slaughtered but cannot be slaughtered. And when Ebony puts those horns on it, it is this genius reminder that lynching is not some antique event from the 19th century or the earliest 20th century, that it happened into the era, deep into the era of jazz. Mm. It happened almost into the moment of rock and roll. Mm. And that is why I'm so thrilled that Ebony gathered together this entire group of what I consider this of brown and black women who were riding a posse of black female genius riding to the rescue of my legacy. When these songs had been forgotten, though I had had actually songs recorded in the 80s, 90s, zeros, tens, and 20s, nobody that noticed that until Ebony and these extraordinary women who are so busy doing their amazing projects of their own, every single one of them, with almost nothing in it for them except to come together and create community, came together and lifted me high.
Wow. Miss Randall, it's amazing to hear the history and the support and the village that it took to bring these artists, including yourself, due recognition. There's so much more we could go into, but we'll have to call it there. But let me just say thank you. We've been talking to author and songwriter Alice Randall about her forthcoming memoir and album, which are both titled My Black Country. The memoir out on April 9th and the album the 12th. She's also going to have an upcoming event in New York City on Wednesday, April 10th at Brooklyn Public Library's Central Branch with Charlemagne the God and special guest Roseanne Cash at 7 p.m. Eastern. Miss Randall, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. It's been wonderful to be with you. Love your song selections.
Thank you. In our conversation we just had with Alice Randall, we talked about friend of the station and one of Randall's collaborators, the banjo player, singer, and scholar Rhiannon Giddens, who also features on the new country album from Beyoncé. And if you're listening now and you've been listening to the show, you might have heard that Rhiannon is also one of our special guests on the 2024 Public Song Project, which, hey, you still have time to get involved with yourself. So to close our conversation with Alice Randall about Black women in country music and in light of the release of Cowboy Carter, we thought that now would be a good time to debut Rhiannon's public song contribution. I'm a Little Blackbird Looking for a Bluebird was originally published around 1924. It's most closely associated with Florence Mills, who is a prominent vaudeville performer of the Harlem Renaissance. Her breakthrough as a performer came when she appeared in Shuffle Along. That's the landmark all-black Blake and Sissel. She later appeared in the all-black musical revue Blackbirds, where this song originated, later becoming Mills' signature song. And with all of that considered, here's Rhiannon Giddens with I'm a Little Blackbird Looking for a Bluebird. It's written by Grant Clark, Arthur Johnston, George W. Meyer, and Roy Turk. Here it is.
Never had no happiness. Never felt no one's caress. Just a lonesome bit of humanity, born on a Friday, I guess. Blue as anyone can be, clouds are all I ever see. If the sun forgets no one, why don't it shine for me? I'm a little blackbird looking for a bluebird too. You know little blackbirds get a little lonesome too. And blue, I've been all over from east to west in search of someone to feather my nest. Why don't I find one the same as you do? The answer must be that I...
That was Rhiannon Giddens with I'm a Little Blackbird Looking for a Bluebird for the 2024 Public Song Project. It's one of a growing list of songs from friends of WNYC, like They Might Be Giants, Arturo O'Farrell, Valerie June, and more, who are all a part of this year's project. And you could be featured alongside them. You have until May 12th to send in your song based on a work in the public domain. So go to WNYC.org/ publicsongproject to find out more about how to get involved and for a chance to be interviewed on WNYC and included in a playlist with all these other artists. You can also listen back to all the songs we've shared so far at that address. That's WNYC.org/publicsongproject. And remember, you don't have to be a pro to get involved. We're excited to hear your songs.
Go spread the word. When you get a fresh, hot McCrispy from McDonald's and you can feel the heat coming through the bag, don't try to wait till you get home. Always respect hot chicken. The McCrispy, only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.